Good evening, dear friends. My name's Barbara, and I'll be your bellminder tonight. So we have arrived. We can be here together and just settle in, and we're having a new experience tonight where our peaceful refuge Sangha has invited other Sanghas to join us, specifically Tiger Mountain Sangha in Issaquah, Washington, that was founded by Tim and Jan Motley. Wave, Tim. And I also see other old friends here. Ania's here, and Annie Malik, and all kinds of people. So this is a wonderful coming together. I was at, my husband Robert and I were on a Zoom call a couple of weeks ago with some monks from Deer Park Monastery in Escondido and some lay people. And we were talking, and I was sharing what we were going to be doing tonight. And one of the monks, Phap Yum, said, "Oh, that's, we call that Sangha dating." And so he said, "That's when one Sangha invites another Sangha to practice together. It's, you're on a Sangha date." So it really feels to me kind of like a Sangha date, because it feels very new and fresh, kind of exciting, kind of uncertain, a little bit awkward maybe. And we'll just see what happens, you know. But I have faith in the practice that it will be good regardless of whatever else happens. So I'm thinking that maybe we could just take a minute and just notice all the wonderful people who are here. And now we have two pages on my, I only get 25 per screen. So be sure to look at everybody. Just take a minute and look at all the wonderful people who are here. And if you can show your face, that would be wonderful. If there's a reason you can't, that's okay. So when we all come together and we bring our attention to the present moment and we show up fully, there is a transmission that happens among us. There is the sacred energy of the now that's here. So that's what we get to enjoy, and that's really all we're doing here. It's just relaxing and enjoying being together. So it's going to be new and different for everybody, including the people from Peaceful Refuge who might think they know what's going to happen. But one of the main changes where I'm making tonight is that we usually have a nice, long, extended silent meditation at the beginning. And instead, because we have our wonderful Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara with her main skill is deep listening, we're going to listen to the chant, Avalokita chant, which is also a video. So it's something we can watch and listen. The monks and nuns of Plum Village are performing this chant with our dear Thai at the lead. So this is going to be really quite a wonderful experience if you haven't seen it. It's interesting for me to listen to a chant, to music that's as deep as this and penetrates me as deeply, and also to watch. And I always have this issue where I want to watch, but then when I close my eyes, the music penetrates a lot deeper. So I would encourage you to experiment. If you haven't seen it, of course, you're going to want to watch it for a while. But also experiment with closing your eyes and just being with the music and let the music come into you. I mean, it can penetrate all the cells of your body and really open your heart with that deep compassion. So we're going to start with, it's a long chant. It's 22 minutes. So we'll do that, and then we'll have a little break, and then I'll offer a teaching. So Dorothy, if you would take it away.
Yeah.
So, dear friends, maybe take a minute to stretch a little bit or take a sip of water, whatever your body, just listen to your body. Do what it needs. So tonight we're going to continue our exploration of our question, how can I help? Which is really the question of the Bodhisattva. And it's especially the question of our honored guest tonight, Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of great compassion. So those of you who know me know when I start talking, I usually have a lot to say, so I'm going to apologize in advance if I go over the time a little bit. I'll do my best to do better in the future. I hope everyone has had a chance to listen to the talk that was given in January, which introduced the concept of the Bodhisattva and how we can use this teaching as a model for embodying our highest selves, the blossoming of our greatest potential. You're always welcome to go back and listen to the earlier talks, which are or will be posted on the Peaceful Refuge Sangha website. So as we probably all know, a bodhisattva is a being who represents the qualities of our awakened selves, of how a human responds to the world when all resistance and separation has dissolved. We can also call these beings archetypes or even heroes, whatever feels most meaningful to us. The great mythologist Joseph Campbell, who studied and described the hero's journey, said his definition of a hero is someone who joyfully participates in the sorrows of the world. For me, this describes a bodhisattva just about perfectly. Deeply inside all these teachings is the insight that this life we are living is filled with joy and sorrow, that they are interconnected, they're two sides of the same coin. And when we learn the art of suffering, our lives blossom into rich, meaning-filled experiences. Our lives are filled with well-being, not by avoiding suffering, but by having the courage to come close, to become intimate with it. When we look carefully at our lives, we can see that the moments of greatest challenge are the ones that open the door to our growth and development as real human beings. So for the past 3 months, we've become friends with the great Bodhisattva Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of great understanding. To me, there's nothing more precious than right understanding, as it's the basis of our ability to love and to be free in this world. When Manjushri cuts through our illusions and confusion, the light of love shines in us and through us. We become a force of love in the world. Our clarity attracts people and helps others to come to understanding. We can open doors of stuck thinking for others with our imaginative ways of seeing. We bring lightness and joyful energy to people who are caught in old stories of hurt and loss. With our sword of understanding, we clear a path for love. Every obstacle, every challenge, every experience of suffering is there to help you have right view, to help you expand your experience of life, to open your heart to receive and give more love. Right view is the door to compassion. So as we know, the Dharma teaches that as a bird needs two wings to fly, we need both the wing of wisdom and the wing of compassion. And we all have all these elements already within us. There's nothing we need to add or change about our nature in order to fly freely. We just need to let go of whatever is covering our natural state. This state is called bodhicitta, the mind of love. Bodhicitta is our basic goodness, inherent in every being and in all life. Sokni Rinpoche defines bodhicitta as vast, unbiased altruism, a heart full and open to life, ready to be a helper. Joseph Goldstein says, when compassion and wisdom are both present in our lives, even to a small extent, there's a remarkable transformation because they bring a creative power to the way we live, the way we act, and the way we relate. As we develop the qualities of wisdom and compassion, we have more options in the way we respond to life's events. A moment of suffering transforms into a moment of insight and connection. Transformation happens through our ability to see with the eyes of connection, the eyes of love. There's a teaching called transformation at the base. When our very way of experiencing and responding to the world is changed, this comes when our understanding and our compassion are activated. Those of you who know me have probably heard this story, but for me, I'm going to tell it because it's an example of the miracles that can happen when we develop our wisdom and compassion, and it's often hardship that creates the fertile ground. About 13 years ago, I was diagnosed with an aggressive cancer with a poor prognosis. 3 months after finishing chemo, I was returning to have my first doctor's visit. Now, I was raised in the Christian Science Church, which instilled in me the belief that if you get sick, somehow it's your fault. I had always been a healthy person, but was unaware that I had kept myself at a distance from those who weren't. I was great at denial, but not really skilled in facing suffering. So as you enter this facility that I was going to, the waiting room is lined with chairs filled with very ill people who are waiting for treatment or to see their doctors. After having gone through serious illness and strong treatment, something in me had changed. And as I stood at the entrance, looking at all these folks, suddenly my heart opened and I said to myself, this is my tribe. A wall between me and those dealing with illness had lifted, and I felt the opening and expanding of my heart. I hadn't even been conscious of this wall around my heart. I wouldn't trade my insight and growing ability to love for anything. And of course, that love was already in me, ready to be uncovered and released. And it makes me wonder what other walls are inside me, blocking my ability to love. It's why I'm committed to this daily work of seeing more clearly and loving more deeply. So tonight our honored guest is Avalokiteshvara, but first, she has brought a special friend with her, a bonus bodhisattva tonight you may not have been introduced to before. His name is Bodhisattva Wonderful Sound. Gadgadasvara is his name. So the story goes that when Shakyamuni Buddha taught the Lotus Sutra on Vulture Peak on the Gritakuta Mountain, it was such a wonderful teaching that many, many Buddhas and Bodhisattvas from other cosmic realms came to witness this event. And they came in the form of huge, beautiful lotus blossoms. When I was given the lamp transmission to become a Dharma teacher, the first line of the poem given to me by Thay and the ancestors is, on the path returning to the Gritakuta Mountain, I see lotus flowers blooming. So this refers to all the great earthly and cosmic beings supporting our path of practice. So music, represented by Bodhisattva Wonderful Sound, doesn't come from our earthly home, but it comes from the cosmos. When I first learned this, it struck me deeply, having experienced that some music seemed to bypass my mental activity and communicate straight into the depths of me. The poet Rilke says it this way, "That is why the bird sings its songs into the world, as though it were singing into its inner self. That's why we take birdsong into our own inner selves so easily. It seems to us that we translate it fully with no remainder into our feelings. Birdsong can even for a moment make the whole world into a sky within us, because we feel that the bird does not distinguish between its heart and the world's." And Bono, the musician of U2, says, "Music offers a language to a part of us we weren't sure was there. Our spirit, our essence, whatever it is, it's beyond our mind and body. It's the something other." A few months ago, I attended the Seattle Symphony, and I was sitting mid-level in the hall on the side. There's some, you know, different levels. A wonderful piece was playing, and suddenly there was this strong, pure, and beautiful sound, but I couldn't identify the instrument it was coming from. I heard several more notes before realizing that they were coming from a young boy who was sitting on my level at the far end of the hall. He was quite possibly a musical savant. The sounds were so pure and strong and seemed to come from the heart of the music being played by the instruments. His mom eventually took him out of the hall, and I was so disappointed. I still feel that I was in the presence of something that bypassed thought. It felt like it came straight from the heart of wonderful sound, Bodhisattva. Thich Nhat Hanh describes the work of Bodhisattva wonderful sound this way. "Awakened understanding is the capacity to understand the hearts of people, the inner expression, as well as the words people say. This kind of liberating music can go right to the heart of the person who hears it and transform their mind and heart. We are following the path of Bodhisattva wonderful sound when we create sacred music, sacred art, or sacred language." So over the next 3 months, you might want to explore your creativity through channeling gifts of Bodhisattva wonderful sound. Here are some suggestions. You might listen to music in a way that you can let it straight into your heart. You can experiment with closing your eyes. Perhaps you can even manipulate your ears. Have you ever done this? Your hearing is completely different when you pull your ears forward. You can hear so much better, especially out in nature. You might experiment with listening to different kinds of music than you usually listen to. You could listen to the sounds of the world without labeling or naming them. You can get to know impermanence through watching the disappearing and appearing of sounds. Invite them in as a part of the ever-changing flow of life. And of course, you can always take a break from listening to your mental activity and open to the world around you. Bring a curious, open beginner's mind and heart to your exploration. So we know that bodhisattvas respond to the needs of the world. That's what they're here for. That means the primary skill they need is to stay open, to not turn away when something is painful or difficult. Instead, they cultivate the impulse to turn toward it, to open their eyes and ears and arms and hearts, so they can respond in a way that will be healing, that will help alleviate the suffering that's happening. So our Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, or also known as Kuan Yin or Quan Thế Âm in Vietnamese, exemplifies this responsive nature more than any other Bodhisattva. So this is the only Bodhisattva that holds both genders, starting as Avalokiteshvara, a male, and becoming Kuan Yin, a female embodiment of compassion. She holds the energy of the mother, the same energy as Mary, as Tara. I'll refer to her in the feminine, but please hold the understanding that she is both. So there are two main origin stories of Kuan Yin, represented by two images that we'll look at. So Dorothy, do you want to put the first one up? So we'll be hoping that the bar will be removed. There she is. So this image is Kuan Yin holding her vase and riding a dragon across the ocean of suffering. The dragon is the dragon of protection and wisdom. So there's a wonderful book by a man named John Blofeld called The Bodhisattva of Compassion. It contains many historical stories of this bodhisattva from several different Asian countries. The story goes, as the great Buddhas were completing their work of creating the world, as they were walking back into the ultimate dimension where they live, Kuan Yin Avalokiteshvara turned back to the world and, hearing the cries of those suffering in our dualistic world, she began to cry. She was holding a vase, and as her tears fell into the vase, they became the nectar of compassion, the balm to soothe the wounds of the world. She made the vow that she would not leave the world until every being was freed of their suffering. So began the Bodhisattva path. So the wild waves represent our world of duality, the wild uncertainties that throw us around and cause us to lose our center. However, she's standing on the dragon of wisdom, which protects her and allows her to see clearly, to anchor into the world of peace and solidity, to keep her heart open in the midst of the fires of pain. She travels across the sea of suffering to the shore of awakening, safe and free. So, Dorothy, can you put the second image up? The second image is by contemporary artist Mayumi Oda, of the same Kuan Yin on the ocean, but she has a dolphin she's standing on instead of a dragon. Beautiful. Yeah. And then the third image represents the second main theme of Avalokiteshvara. And that's the Avalokiteshvara you might have seen, that's standing with 1,000 arms. There she is. Each of her palms has an eye in the center of it, symbolizing her ability to see and help no matter the person or the situation. This image sees her as the perceiver of suffering of the world. She perceives through her hearing and her sight. She truly hears and sees us and is present to help relieve our suffering. She holds a different tool in each of her hands, able to respond to any need. There's a story in John Blofeld's book about a criminal who had hurt many people, but when he sincerely called on Avalokita for help, she was bound to respond. Her love and care is unconditional, because she sees the bodhicitta in everyone. Okay, Dorothy, you can remove that image, I think. So compassion is the great wing that balances wisdom. And listening is the main skill that is used in the art of compassion. So why is our archetype of compassion one who listens? Why is this the primary skill? What's so great about listening? We know that our fourth mindfulness training is about deep listening and loving speech. Sometimes I like to change it to deep listening and appropriate response, because often the most appropriate response is silence. In our tradition, we have an invocation to Avalokiteshvara, praising her ability to listen without any judgment or agenda. It goes like this. We invoke your name, Avalokiteshvara. We aspire to learn your way of listening in order to help relieve the suffering in the world. You know how to listen in order to understand. We invoke your name in order to practice listening with all our attention and open-heartedness. We will sit and listen without any prejudice. We will sit and listen without judging or reacting. We will sit and listen in order to understand. We will sit and listen so attentively that we will be able to hear what the other person is saying and also what is left unsaid. We know that just by listening deeply, we already alleviate a great deal of pain and suffering in the other person. So let's take a minute or two to recall a time when you really needed to be listened to. If you had someone to listen to you deeply without offering their own story or trying to fix you, remember how it felt. And if you haven't had this experience, use your imagination to feel how it would be if there were a kind, loving, open-hearted listener there to support you. The reality is that we have answers to all the questions within us. No one else truly knows what's right for us. Our wisdom is the only tool we can use to make choices. Being listened to deeply by someone who's completely attentive and without expectation is the best medicine for finding our way. The transformative medicine of being seen and heard, being acknowledged and accepted, heals deep wounds and gives us strength and courage to go on. This is an excerpt from a poem called When Someone Deeply Listens to You by John Fox. When someone deeply listens to you, it is like holding out a dented cup you've had since childhood and watching it fill up with fresh, cold water. When it balances on the top of the rim, you are understood. When it overflows and touches your skin, you are loved. When someone deeply listens to you, your bare feet are on the earth, and a beloved land that seemed distant is now at home within you. So this kind of listening takes all our skill, all our practice, because to show up in this way for another means showing up empty. Empty of any need, any craving or grasping, any judgment, any idea about how things should be. Just open-hearted, curious, and attentive. Bearing witness to what is the miracle of the other in their joy or pain, their hurt or confusion, their deep sadness. Holding it all with them while not holding on to anything. Not adding your energy in any way except as the clear blue sky. This kind of offering brings tremendous healing. In the smallest interactions in our day, this is transformative action. Someone asks a question or makes a statement, and by listening in this way, we're able to hear the fear or sadness below the words and to offer a smile of support, a connection that brings healing instead of dismissal. In our ordinary ways of communicating, often we don't connect at the heart level. So in a micro way, our belief in separation is reinforced. But when someone listens with their full presence, we go away feeling loved, and our hearts feel connected, not just to that person, but to all things. That's why it's good to slow down a bit when we can, to speak a little slower, to let pauses happen in our conversations, to give us a chance to really hear what is going on, what this precious soul is trying to express from their heart. Our teacher, Tai, has taught much about the power of deep compassionate listening. We could spend a lifetime cultivating the Dharma door of deep listening, and it would be worthy of our time. In 2009, Peaceful Refuge Sangha held a series of workshops on compassionate listening. With mostly interactive exercises and sharing, our practice deepened. There are a few of us here tonight who participated in those, probably Fred and Mary Jane, maybe Karen and Robert, and maybe others. You might like to consider having some workshops on compassionate listening again with your Sangha, and I have lots of resources if you want to do that. So when we're able to settle into our body and our mind and to simply rest in the reality of the moment, we enable our hearts to listen, both to ourselves and to others. We can offer that stillness, that openness. That is compassionate listening, showing up fully, trusting that being present to life will be the healing. When we practice like Avalokiteshvara, the object of concentration is sound. We follow our breath and listen to whatever presents itself within us and around us. Avalokiteshvara is known as the universal Dharma door, the universal gateway to liberation. All beings can enter this doorway. This means that no matter what the situation, love is the answer. The poet Mark Nepo says, deep listening requires letting go of our internal argument with the world. We let go of needing or wanting things to be different than they are in this moment. Compassionate listening requires letting go. We practice compassionate listening to monitor the opening of our heart. We are aware of our capacity to stay present, and when our hearts begin to close, we need to take good care of ourselves. Sometimes when listening to the pain of another, it becomes too much for us to hold, and we need to excuse ourselves with the promise to show up later when we are refreshed. It's a great service to others when we can learn to hold our own suffering. We carry the practice of compassion for ourselves within the heart of moving outwards to others. So we can use Avalokiteshvara as a refuge when we start to feel overwhelmed by suffering, when our hearts are having a hard time opening to what is in front of us. When we call on her, when we ask her to take over, often we find that we become her and our capacity expands to fill the need. There's another manifestation of Avalokiteshvara, which is called the fierce-faced bodhisattva. So this is the fierce-faced bodhisattva of compassion. Compassion isn't just soft and gentle. So the fierce-faced bodhisattva is the one that you'll find guarding the temple gates. You know, very fierce face. This is the one that pulls the hand of the child away from a hot stove. Sometimes we need to be strong and bold with our love to prevent harm. Creating firm boundaries is an act of compassion. Once, several years ago, I was at Costco shopping, and I was being lazy, and I left my purse in the cart as I walked away to look at something. A woman stopped me and reminded me not to do that. She was probably thinking of my welfare, but I realized that it is not a kindness to create a temptation for someone else to steal, someone who might be hurting and hungry and needing what's in my purse. It was an act of compassion not to create that situation of temptation. In these kinds of small ways, compassion for others can flow through our days when we have the clarity to see through the eyes of love. In this way, we gently transform our world and take care of our dogs. Compassion has so many faces. Which is the one that will most alleviate suffering in this moment? Is it being silent and listening deeply? Is it offering a simple kindness? Is it speaking a truth that needs to be spoken? Is it setting a boundary? Our wisdom helps us find the appropriate response. You may want to focus on developing one particular aspect of this bodhisattva over the next quarter, one that speaks to you. So the doorway to compassion is empathy. When our impulse changes from turning away to turning towards suffering, where we can begin to take wise action as a helper. Here's a description of empathy from an 8-year-old boy. What you do is you forget everything else that's in your head, and then you make your mind into their mind. Then you know how you're feeling, so you know how to help them. That was a pretty good description. So compassion is a verb, as our teacher has told us, and our action must come from the heart of love. Listening is the action dimension of the quality of generosity, of the quality of love, of equanimity, of making room for everything. When we master the art of listening, we know what to do, and our action becomes a healing. And if we ever diminish in our minds the importance of deep listening and hearing others, being present for others, or how transformative deep listening can be, I remember this quote by Martin Luther King Jr., who said, "Violence is the language of the unheard." So the action we take can be a great engagement with the world or simply offering a smile. The quality of our action comes from our motivation and our clarity. One of the Dalai Lama's compassion practices is to treat each person he meets as an old friend. Think about the kindness, the acceptance, and the connection that simple practice contains. Maybe you'd like to try that for the next 3 months. Treat everyone you meet as an old friend. And there's one more kind of secret gift that happens that we receive when we cultivate compassion. Compassion is the very best protection because it frees us from our ego. It turns our view from the illusion of separateness to the interwoven nature of life. As some of you might know, my favorite line in the Course of Miracles says, "In defenselessness, my safety lies." When we have nothing to defend, we are completely safe. The art of compassion demands that we be empty and open, defending nothing, resisting nothing. Then we are free to be used as a force of healing, a force of goodness and beauty in the world. Thay says that when someone hurts your feelings, it's because your heart isn't big enough, because you cannot see their suffering deeply enough. This is great protection, and we can cultivate this in ourselves. There's no limit to our ability to create our own safety through how we see and respond to the world. So resting childlike in openness of mind, we feel protected and at peace. We understand that love is built into the nature of what we are and of what the world is, and we are free to respond to love as love. With nothing to defend, our hearts are open to the beauty and the sorrow. Our lives are filled with gratitude for this communal dance of life. So this next quarter, please explore the cultivation of compassion in some of these ways that I've mentioned, and I'll review, by listening deeply to chanting and music that stirs your soul and wakens your heart. Listen and explore the sacred creative within you. Listen to your own precious self and become intimate with the voices within you. Listen to the cries of the world, not as a fixer, but as a representative of that love that sustains us all. Be a loving witness with your openness and your vulnerability. Treat everyone you meet as an old friend. So showing up as an empty vessel, needing nothing, we're able to shine the light of love into any situation. With our presence, bit by bit, we're able to hold more. Our capacity for seeing deeply into the true nature of suffering grows, and we become alchemists, transforming pain into love. We hold the deep vein of suffering that pervades our world and pour our love into it as an offering. When we open our arms and step out of that as that love, healing and transformation are the fruit of our actions. The poet Hafiz describes our great aspiration in listening this way. How do I listen to others? As if everyone were my master, speaking to me his cherished last words. So, dear friends, it's been wonderful to dive into the heart of great compassion with you. I know in studying about this and practicing with this over the past couple of months, the law of attraction, so much about compassion and deep listening has come up for me from many, many teachers and many sources. So I'm sure if you focus on this, the same will happen for you. It's such a huge topic. I hope you can feel, as I do, the blossoming that's happening right here within us all, and how we've had this fresh start, this new experiment of being together. And in June, both Peaceful Refuge Sangha and Tiger Mountain Sangha will be having days of mindfulness. And they included in the day of mindfulness will be a formal ceremony to transmit the five mindfulness trainings, which are the ethical basis of our practice. You know, we practice in this historical dimension, in the world of duality, and our inspiration comes from these bodhisattvas, from the ones who figured out how to have love pervade everything and how to respond clearly and deeply to what's needed. And the mindfulness trainings are a translation from the bodhisattva path to how to actually make decisions and choices and give us guidance in our daily lives, which we all know how much we need, because the world is very confusing and full of very confusing choices that seem to manifest faster and faster. So the five mindfulness trainings are the basic ethical precepts. And we have, of course, everyone can follow them and practice with them. But when you receive them in a formal ceremony, what you're doing is you're stating to yourself, especially, and to your community, that you have a sincere desire to walk on this path. This is not a path of perfection. This is not a path of you have to achieve everything before you take these. This is a path of inspiration and confidence and courage. So if anyone who has a sincere wish to do this can receive the five mindfulness trainings in the formal ceremony. And if you're interested in that at all, talk to your Sangha facilitators. There's a very simple application form that you fill out. And then you get to receive the special gift. And I'd say probably the most wonderful thing about it is that your whole community supports you by having them cheering you on in that ceremony. And then during that day, those days of mindfulness, we'll explore the paramitas, which are the qualities that all bodhisattvas have. And they're kind of like what shows up if you are a bodhisattva, if you have no resistance and you have no agenda, but you're here as just a responsive love force, and that's how you live. And those are the qualities that come forth. So we'll be exploring that in June as well. And then in July, there'll be the next quarter and the next surprise guest bodhisattva. And if we want to continue, which we haven't been able to do. So I would like to end with a quote from the Dalai Lama on the need for all of us to do this work of cultivating compassion. He says, "A mind committed to compassion is like an overflowing reservoir, a constant source of energy, determination, and kindness. This is like a seed that, when cultivated, gives rise to many other good qualities, such as forgiveness, tolerance, inner strength, and the confidence to overcome fear and insecurity. The compassionate mind is like an elixir. It is capable of transforming bad situations into beneficial ones. Therefore, we should not limit our expressions of love and compassion to our family and friends, nor is compassion only the responsibility of clergy, healthcare, and social workers. It is the necessary business of every human being." So, another way of saying a bodhisattva is to be a real human being. And to be a real human being, we are growing our hearts of compassion and wisdom. So thank you very much. I want to offer us one bell. And we take one more minute to just make eye contact, or make roving eye contact as we take a look at each other, and maybe our faces have transformed a little bit. Well, it's so good to see you all. And are there any announcements that need to be made? Okay, well, if you want to wave, and if you want to unmute yourself and say hi to everybody and goodbye to everybody.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to see everyone.
Yes.
Oh, there's the guy.
Smaller by the minute.
Hi, Tim. Nice to see you in person.
Amazing.
Hey, Dorothy.
Hi there.
Nice job.
It's the best.
Thank you.